You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
When my son Cody was an infant, he suffered from severe food and environmental allergies, as well as anaphylactic reactions, and one of the worst allergies was to mold. Now, at the time, I was a sports medicine specialist, so I really didn't know much about allergies, and I really felt completely helpless, and, you know, I couldn't help my son. So what I ended up doing was basically went right into learning more about what allergies were about, and I attended the American Academy of Environmental Medicine postgraduate courses so that I can learn the best strategies on how to treat a mold-sensitive person. Now, since then, I've helped thousands of mold toxic patients across America restore vibrant health, and I still continue my education to this day to improve my skills as a diagnostician and treatment for mold toxicity. Now, last summer, I attended one of the best mold seminars ever, and which actually was taught by our guest today, mold and chronic illness expert and number one best-selling author of the new book, Mold and Mycotoxins, Dr. Neil Nathan. Gosh, I'm so happy to have you here on my show on Wellness for Life, Dr. Nathan.
Well, thank you, Suzanne. I'm very delighted to be here with you.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. Now, we've gone to classes together. And of course, your class was amazing because you went through detailed about the mold patient and how to recognize them. And then, of course, the treatment protocols. And I'm really hoping that we can talk a lot about that here today and talk about your book, Mold and Mycotoxins. It's an excellent book. Thank you so much for, writing that book. And, of course, I have it myself. And I'd like you to just give us an explanation of briefly about the difference between a mold allergy case and a mold toxicity case.
Excellent start. So that, first of all, for listeners, there's a huge difference between mold allergy and mold toxicity. Allergies are kind of what you think they would be. They would include things like sneezing, runny nose, congestion, even to the point of having asthma. But toxicity is a completely different critter. Unfortunately, you can have allergy and toxicity in the same individual. But toxicity, and this is what I hope will be a take-home message to your listeners, toxicity is a very varied, intense group of symptoms which can be so complicated that many physicians have still not heard of it. Mold toxicity, and if you don't mind, I'll kind of launch into it, would include things like chronic fatigue, difficulty with thinking, brain fog, intestinal symptoms, severe diarrhea, nausea, throwing up, respiratory symptoms, not allergic, but chest pain, chest tightness, air hunger, the feeling like you can't take a deep breath. It also includes numbness and tingling in different parts of the body. It also includes joint pain, muscle weakness, imbalance, dizziness, lightheadedness, marked increase in sensitivity potentially to everything. And that means sensitivity to light, sound, touch, chemicals, and even EMF, electromagnetic waves. Also important are mood swings, intense anxiety, even to the point of panic attacks and depression. Now, this is a huge range of symptoms, and often if a provider has never heard of this combination before, the obvious thing is, well, this must be in your head. Nobody has all those symptoms. But the fact is that mold toxicity can and does cause all of them. So those are the kinds of things that people should begin to be aware of in terms of thinking that if they've not been well and their medical provider has not figured out what's wrong with them, think mold toxicity.
Yeah, all of these symptoms, a lot of us kind of walk around with it. I mean, we're tired, we can't think straight, we might have, mood swings. I mean, we all deal with some of these symptoms, but it's those individuals that actually don't feel that they're getting any results from, let's say, bed rest and eating better and, making sure that you are sleeping really well. You know what I mean? All of that.
Yeah, and the opposite is even true. One of the things that occurs with mold toxicity particularly fancy word for if you are active or try to exercise, then afterwards you get wasted for days afterwards. And well-intentioned friends and family will tell you, if you could just exercise, you'll get well. And they're wrong. In this particular case, the body is saying is, I don't have any reserves here. So it's very important that if getting that kind of a symptom, that you begin to think this is not a simple case of being, you know, deconditioned or not getting the proper amount of exercise. This is something more.
Mm. So mold toxicity affects many systems, it sounds, right? And yeah, that is multifactorial. And you really got to go to a mold literate doctor, someone who really understands what mold toxicity is about and how to diagnose it properly, you know, because in my office, we use a history form. It's more like a symptom check sheet to see, could this be mold related? And I'm like one of those detectives, you know, I've got to ask a lot of questions to get to the root cause of it. And how else do you diagnose mold toxicity, Dr. Nathan?
Well, again, the first thing, and I really want to emphasize it, is to think about it as a possible diagnosis. And I want to bring up one real important feature that often people are not aware of, which is that when I ask patients, you know, do you have any mold in your environment? Can you smell it? Can you see it? Many patients will go, no, my house is a new house. It's clean. It's okay. I'm quite sure it's not there. And then I have to go, as you say, like a detective, but did you ever live in a moldy environment when you were, you know, in college in a dorm? And what we've learned is that if your mold exposure was even years ago, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years ago, it could have what we call colonized, which means the mold could actually start growing in your sinuses or in your gut, and it could be making the toxins, and it might be fairly well contained by your immune system if you're reasonably healthy, but if you get an illness, a flu, childbirth, surgery, an enormous stress, and you weaken the immune system, then this can start to emerge, and this could have been old exposure. So it's important to really dig into, is there any mold exposure? My other comment to start with is if you've been diagnosed as having chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, autoimmune illnesses, mold predisposes to those, MS, ALS, Parkinson's, especially if the neurologist says, well, you know, it's kind of hard to diagnose this. It's what they call atypical MS or ALS or Parkinson's. Any diagnosis that you've been given in which it's not behaving normally, think mold.
That's very good to know. You know, when you think about, you mentioned something, you said toxins. So let's go and talk about the difference between mold and mycotoxins, because is it the mold that is damaging or is the mycotoxins that's damaging to our body?
Actually, it's both. Mycotoxins are the toxins that mold make to keep other molds out of their echo space, if you will, out of their environment. But although we talk about mold toxicity as if it's one thing, it's actually pretty complicated. So when you're exposed to mold, you are exposed to the mold toxins, which we call mycotoxins, but also to volatile particles in the air, which we call VOCs, a variety of bacteria, fragments of spores, pieces of spore-like material, and a number of biochemical materials all constitute the irritants that set off the inflammational response that creates all of these reactions in this wide array of symptoms.
You know, people know about what's called black mold, Dr. Nathan, because some celebrities been talking about it in the past, being that they had to move out of their house because it was filled with this stachybotrys black mold. But I'm finding that there are other molds that are also just as toxic. Can you talk about that?
Sure. And even saying black mold, most people assume that black mold is the one that you've called correctly, stachybotrys. But there are other black molds which are equally or if not more toxic, including a variety of species of Aspergillus. So sorry about the technical names here. that there are 7 or 8 known toxic species of mold. And they, Aspergillus, Penicillium, Alternaria, Stachybotrys, Wallenia are common ones. It's not important that listeners know the names, but that there are, the problem is in water-damaged buildings, meaning there's 1,000 species of mold right outside my window right now. I live in the woods in Northern California, and the vast majority of those are not toxic to me. You're not going to get toxic mold from walking in the woods. You get it when mold starts growing in a water-damaged building without any natural enemies or anything to curtail its growth, and that's where we really get our difficulties.
So water damage is super important. So anyone who might have a shower leak or from the rains, because we've had major rains here down in Los Angeles, and I am seeing a lot of people come in with more of irritations caused by mold growth. But even I've even found people, at least in my practice, that they get very irritated in the gut, and might not be that it's causing mold toxicity per se and causing a lot of symptoms, but if they eat foods that might be moldy.
Well, I don't think that eating mold is anywhere near as harmful to the body as taking it in through the respiratory tract.
Good to know.
Now, people argue about that. There's a lot written on the internet about avoiding moldy food. I'm not telling people to please throw out, if you have moldy food in your refrigerator, throw it out. Don't eat it. That's not what I'm saying. But most of us, there hasn't been any research on this whatsoever. And most of us who work in this field are not convinced that the majority of the insult to the body comes from the food that we eat. It's primarily when you're taking in the spores that are moving through your home. The biggest issue, for example, would be when mold gets into the heating and cooling systems of buildings, and then the spores get spewed out into the air and people are taking it in. That's the worst.
Right, right. You know, I've learned from you, you know, using immunolytics. For individuals out there who's not sure if you've got any mold growing in your home, you can use a company called Immunolytics, which immunolytics.com, that's where you can get these mold plates. Can you share a little bit about that? Because that's what I recommend now to my patients, too, and it's been very helpful.
Right, and we use it a lot as well. I like that company very much. You can get it yourself without needing a prescription. Now, mold plates are just a petri dish that has a medium that grows mold, and it's real simple to use. You simply take the top of the plate off, put it on the floor of a room that you suspect may be moldy, let it sit with the top off for 2 hours, put the top back on, and then just look at the plate, see what grows over the next 3 to 5 days. If you're looking at a plate that is ugly at the end of 3 days, you definitely want to send it in to the Immunolytics company. They will analyze that plate and tell you what is actually on it. And here's the important part of that. About 50% of the species that do grow on these plates are not toxic to humans. So you don't have to freak out if you see mold growing on it. That may not be mold that has any meaning for you whatsoever. On the other hand, if you're growing some of the species that I mentioned, like Penicillium or Fusarium or Aspergillus, then you might really have a problem, and that's something you really want to seek out a healthcare provider who is knowledgeable about mold toxicity so you can really treat it correctly.
So let's go from there. You know, okay, so we found out that, yeah, we've got mold in our home, but how do we know if we've got it in our bodies?
Well, there's two main ways of doing that. The original one, which was developed by Dr. Shoemaker, who is to be honored greatly for his groundbreaking work in helping us all understand not only that mold toxicity was very real and very prevalent, but he also figured out biochemically what mold toxin was doing to the body, and his way of understanding it has really given us leaps and bounds of improvement. Now, his way of analyzing it involves a series of blood tests, which are not really specific for mold, but they tend to indicate that there is a type of inflammation in the body that probably is caused by mold. Now, there's a more specific way of doing it, and this is the one that I use primarily, And it's using a company called RealTime, which is a laboratory in Houston, that simply analyzes your urine and measures the four main families of mold toxins that we can measure in the urine. So it's really simple. You simply get a specimen of urine, you put it in the mailer as it comes with the company, you send it to the company, and they analyze it. And if you are loaded with mold that is out of the normal range, you have mold toxicity and really ought to be treated.
Regarding the real time, you know, what we understand is that if you really want to know how much, using a supplement called glutathione can actually bring out those mycotoxins even more in the urine. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, right. So, I mean, I kept it simple, but I'll make it a little more complicated. When people are mold toxic, one of the problems that they have is mold toxicity interferes with the body's ability to detoxify, meaning the toxins are in you, but you can't even pee them out so that they'll show up on a test. So to make this particular test, which is fairly expensive, more accurate and useful, we do recommend taking glutathione before you collect your urine. We also recommend doing something that makes you sweat, like a hot tub, a sauna, even a hot bath, 30 minutes before you collect your urine. Sweating mobilizes mold toxins, and so does glutathione. And I do have to caution folks that if you're going to be doing that, be careful with glutathione, because it can indeed improve the body's ability to remove toxins or pull them out of your system. But in the process, temporarily, you may get an increase in mold toxicity, and you may not be able to get it out as fast as you're putting it in, and you could get worse. So
right.
If you're attempting this particular test, this is in the category of don't try this at home, kids. If you're trying to do that, be careful, because if you are getting worse taking glutathione, that's a very strong indication that, yep, you've got an excessive amount of toxin in you. And don't continue to take it for the duration of the test. Stop it immediately. Collect your urine right then, and you'll likely get an accurate answer without taking too bad a hit from it.
Oh, I'm glad that you explained that clearly. And I'm sure, you know, the practitioners, that if they do use a mold-literate doctor, they will know how to appropriately advise the patient, the client, how to do it. I wanted to ask you a quick question. You mentioned about sweating. Do you think that the mycotoxins actually come out in the sweat, or is it that it mobilizes it and then our own liver, urine, kidney ends up excreting it out? Do you think mycotoxins come out in sweat?
I don't know the answer to that. That's a very good question, and I don't know.
I use the infrared sauna. We have one in our office, and for all forms of different detoxifications. And I know from studying on the scientific literature, a lot of chemicals come out. Heavy metals come out. Solvents come out. Toxins come out. But I have not read anything about mycotoxins, so I'm excited to see if there's maybe one of these days a test that might show that.
Right, and I completely agree with you. We know that we can find mercury coming out of the body in sweat and other toxins. And it's likely that mycotoxins will also. But I've not actually seen a study either. So again, I'm excellent question, and I don't have a good answer for you.
I must tell you that my patients who do have mold toxicity, when they come out of the sauna, they actually feel better. You know, they do feel better, and it might be that just that the total toxic load has been reduced from the sweating, but either way, it's been a really good treatment protocol for my patients.
Let me just add one thing. I absolutely agree with you, but my really sensitive patients find that they can't take a sauna for too long, or it will
right.
make them worse. So
that's
it's another
right.
word of caution. I love saunas. I recommend them exactly the way you're describing it. But if so many things can mobilize toxin faster than the body can get rid of it, that you just have to be careful about every step of treatment.
Right, right. You know, you and I, I'm we met each other at a methyl genetics conference a couple years ago, and it was such a pleasure talking to you back then. And you were lecturing in at that conference as well, the one by Benjamin Lynch. I'd like to ask you if you find that there's specific genetic conditions that predispose people to mycotoxin and mold toxicity.
Gosh, another good question. And I'm going to give you two answers.
Great.
There are some genetic lines that some people have identified that make it more likely to have mold toxicity. These are not SNPs like what we talk about in some of our conferences. These are actual full gene lines, and they're in the category of HLA-DR. Dr. Shoemaker's done a lot of work implicating that certain of these genetic lines do predispose to making it more difficult to deal with mold toxins. And having said that, my own experience is that I'm not seeing that those genetic predispositions change the treatment or change the people's reaction to treatment, meaning in the patients who are supposedly compromised because of their genes, many of them do great with treatment, and many patients who do not have the genes and ought to be able to be treated easily have a real tough time with treatment. So my experience is that at least in our current understanding of the genetics, I don't find measuring that particularly helpful.
That's good to know. That's good to know. Let's talk about treatment then, Dr. Nathan. What is your approach? I know, for each individual, we got to look at it all separate differently and customizing it. But what are the treatments that you found that really works for mold toxicity patients?
Okay. There are three main components to treatment. The first we've kind of talked about, which is to evaluate your home and work environment to be sure you're not moldy. You won't get well with treatment if you continue to be exposed to mold. Second, we would give you what we call binders, which are materials that actually bind the mold toxins and pull them out of the body. And in the work that we do, I find the real-time laboratory testing extremely helpful in telling me which binders will work best with which patient. And not to be technical, but if you had an ochre toxin excess, as Dr. Shoemaker has found, using the medication cholestyramine or Welchol specifically pulls that out the best. If you had aflatoxin or tricoxazine, chlorella, charcoal, bentonite clay work the best. And with gliotoxin, which we've recently been able to measure, using clay, the good probiotic mold material, Saccharomyces boulardii, that works the best. So it helps if you can streamline your treatment by giving the right binder for what that person has in them. And the third part, which applies to most of my patients, is that the mold has usually in them colonized, meaning it's growing, in their sinus and gut areas. So once we've got those things up and running, we will typically treat with nasal sprays that are antifungal. We'll use nasal sprays that dissolve biofilm in which the mold hides, and then we will move to oral treatments, which include antifungal medications and materials to dissolve biofilm. And many patients are exquisitely sensitive to doses, so you often have to go very slowly and carefully. It often will take a year or more to pull mold toxin out of the system, but here's the good news. It can be treated successfully in the vast majority of patients, and working with someone who knows what they're doing, it's important to at least think about this diagnosis, and this is how we typically go about treating it.
These are all great information. Regarding your binders, are they binders that go just stay in the gut, or do they go into the bloodstream and help with the mycotoxins in the bloodstream?
They don't. Well, if a mycotoxin gets into the bloodstream, the body's natural way of dealing with it, with all toxins, is to actually move that toxin into the liver where it can be dealt with, as all toxins get dealt with. And in the case of mold toxins, typically it's bound to bile, and then it starts its journey through the gastrointestinal tract. So, the answer to the question is most into the bloodstream. Primarily, we are getting rid of it through the gut, and the binders really are not absorbed in the body. Their primary job is to pull these toxins out of the gut.
Got it. God, so much information. I want to talk more, but we're just about done. Dr. Nathan, now, your website is neilnathanmd.com. neilnathanmd.com. And you can find his book, his excellent book, Mold and Mycotoxins, at Amazon. It's a number one bestseller. I'm so, so excited for you. Thank you so much for all you've done and for your time today.
Suzanne, it's always a pleasure talking with you, and I'm hoping to help our listeners know that this is something that they may need to know about to restore the health of both themselves and their family and their loved ones.
You bet. Thanks so much. All right. So I put up the link on my Wellness for Life radio show page on Radio MD. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies for ultimate health and wellness right here on Radio MD. Until next time, stay well.